Thank you, Joe. Good evening again, everybody, and well, by this time you should know who I am and what I am, but we'll properly introduce myself. My name is Rob Sipple, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Moved surely by the grace of the power of a loving God, the power that I found as the result of the program in the textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous, the awakened members of the sacred fellowship that led me to and through this program and continue to guide me today by the service that God leads me to, and I'm allowed and encouraged to participate in, and by a host of teachers in my life, I've been moved from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, that state that I currently experience today at this moment is recovered. Three. Well, let's move on. What we've done in the last several weeks is to, as we talked about, how to move someone through this process rapidly and quickly from knowing nothing about alcoholism to a place where they can have an awakening of the spirit, a transformation of their mind by heart, by spirit, to and then show up and be useful. On page 44, chapter 4, we agnostics, it, in one paragraph, pretty much gives us the a quick review of where we have been brought to by this point. In the preceding chapters, it says, which is the doctor's opinion, the examples in Bill's story, there is a solution and more about alcoholism, and all the examples that are offered in all of those chapters. In the preceding chapters, we have learned something of alcoholism. We hope that we made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely because of the obsession of the mind that always will take me back to the place where I think that I need, deserve, and, you know, am entitled to that relief, and that I'm unable to see that I can't drink safely. Or, if when drinking, I have little control over the amount I take, and that, of course, is because of the allergy of the body that manifests as a phenomenon of craving. So I have a mind that can't see the truth, and so I can't stop and stay stopped. And I have a body that once I can't stay stopped and I put it in me, I'm not done with alcohol until alcohol is done with me. Then it tells me that I'm probably alcoholic. Decide for yourself. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Seems like bad news. But I flip that around into a positive way. If I have a spiritual experience, I can recover. I can conquer this malady that has affected me all my life. And then we have a whole chapter that slogs us through the great misunderstood debate of that we get so caught up in Alcoholics Anonymous of, well, the whole God thing. Nonsense. Our second step came to believe that there is power. Over in 45, lack of power, that's my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live, not just exist, not just maintain, but live, to grow in understanding and effectiveness, to move forward, to walk firmly and with dignity and respect into life, not running from anything. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves, even ourselves collectively. I, on my own human resources alone, I am doomed to repeat. I cannot recover on my own resources, and I cannot recover with just the resources of our fellowship, just other human aid on our own, because we are still all fallible and broken and powerless individuals, even collectively. Obviously, but how and where are we to find this power? Well, that's what this book is about. Its main object is to enable me to find a power which will solve my problem. Cool. I'm out of the management game. I don't have to solve my problem. I've tried for 4 decades to solve my problem. It didn't work. When am I going to stop banging my head against the wall? I just need to find a power that can and will guide me and will solve my problem. Simple stuff. It's really simple stuff. I don't have to solve my problem. I can't solve my problem. The only thing I've been able to do by drinking or trying not to drink or to just, not drink one silly, stupid, miserable day at a time is to show that I can't do that. Stop it. Or just continue to be miserable. Or adopt this as a way of life. Walk forward, take a little bit of action, and be free. what's to think about? Really, what's to think about? If you got to think about that, you're not done. Go get done. But and then it talks about, you know, we find ourselves in that, you know, seething debate of is there a God, isn't there a God, blah, 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 blah. You know, and, you know, we have to deal with the agnostics and the atheists and the believers. And, you know, and all of a sudden, once again, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're in camps. What are you? Where are you at? You know, it's like, I'm just another hopeless garden variety real drunk. And that's who I march along with, other garden variety drunks. I don't care what camp you're in. Do you want to get better for good and for all or not? That's what we're here for. You know? I'm not here for the, you know, for philosophy. I'm not here for theology. I'm not here for you know. But what happens when I run across someone who is resistant, that thinks that they can run the show themselves? If they're completely and totally resistant, then I take them right back to the beginning of the book. Where are you winning in this thing? Where are you running the show? Where are you able to play God? Where are you able to, look at your history. Is it working for you or not? You know? Again, this is the importance of grabbing someone when they still smell like booze. You know, when their nerves are still jittery and they're scared to death, because that's when I am most humbled and most ready and most distraught and willing to look at some other alternative. Other than that, this thing that will turn out to be my God, which is always, you know, thinks it can run the show, is always going to take me back to that place where I know better. That's why I need to move through this fast. You know, I mean, there's... and again, lack of power is my dilemma. And the dilemma is having to choose between two unacceptable options. I'm not too keen on going back to the alcoholic misery, but I'm not too keen on living a spiritual way of life. Okay. What do I do about that? I got to make it look inviting. You know, am I walking a path that looks like what someone wants? You know, Am I happy, joyous, and free? Am I an example of a walking example of this, the joy of living that we really have in this book? You know? Do I look forward and with excitement to the life that I'm given? Or am I just not drinking one day at a time? I gotta get to my meeting tonight because I just don't want to drink today. Look, I don't want that. There's nothing exciting about that. It's like, wow, you're so lucky, man. You're not drinking today. How cool is that? You didn't have a drink today. Awesome. You know, I just presented a 5-year coin to a gentleman that I know up in Tawaka, and there were all sorts of. It was a medal ceremony meeting. You know, the award ceremony where I'd like to thank the Academy for my 5-year coin, and you know. And all that, and which is fine, but to put things in perspective, though, that's over 1934. You know, December of 1934. Dr. Bob in June of 1935. Around 1937, October of 1937. They're sitting around and they're counting up their success stories. And they came up with something like, it was around 40 people. You know, so twice the number of people that are in this room was the entire extent of Alcoholics Anonymous. 2 years, you know, and the old timers had 2 years. Okay? The old timers had 2 years. Well, I just presented a coin to someone who has 5 years, and everyone says, well, keep coming, dude, because, you know, now you finally got your brains. And, you know, it's like, 2 years, they were old timers. Back then, 2 years is still a miracle for someone to be separated from alcohol and to live freely. 5 years is outrageous. You know, let's like, okay. You know, today isn't a miracle not to drink. If I'm also living, if I'm just not drinking, well then there's work to be done. So if you know, this is the kind of stuff that I try to sell with the enthusiasm of, like, you know, this only happens, this is only, you know, possible if I put aside my old ideas, my old conceptions, and which is exactly what it tells me to do on page 46. You know, we have agnostic temperament. You know, and just, again, to be really clear, you know, of the language that's used in the book, an agnostic is one who is without knowledge. Gnosis, the Greek, you know, word for knowledge, and you put an A in front of it, it means to, you know, without knowledge. An agnostic is one who wants faith up front without the experience. And that's not how it works. I don't, you know, and again, we're going to talk, and this is what I do, I talk about the difference between belief and faith when I begin to talk to someone about, you know, their belief in God. Belief in God. And they'll say, well, I used to have, you know, faith in God, but I'm not talking about faith. Belief is merely subscribing to an idea, lending some credence to a concept or an idea that I might think is possible. You know, I believe there's intelligent life in the universe. I can't prove it. Doesn't make a lick of difference in my life whether I believe it or not. But, you know, I'll believe that. I believe that if I, you know, ate better and worked out better, I'd be in better shape. Obviously, I don't, you know, I just believe in that. I have no faith in that because it doesn't show, you know. But, you know, so belief is just lending, you know, some credence to an idea that the idea might be possible. And that's all I'm asking for of the newcomer, is that they suspend their belief, you know, their doubts enough so that they're willing to move forward. And where does that willingness come from? From the hopelessness and the desperation of the, you know, the situation that they just escaped. You know, and so what do I have to do? From an agnostic temperament, someone who wants the experience up front without the, you know, the faith up front without the experience. And faith, as I said, faith is something that is vital to my life, but has, you know, only enters into my life after I have an experience with a process or some sort of experience with it. We have found that as soon as I'm able to lay aside prejudice or even a willingness to believe in a power greater than myself, did we commence to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend the power which is God. And, you know, the early members of Alcoholics Anonymous were very clear where our power was. It was, you know, and it was based upon their experience and their heritage, but it was the power of God. And that's the word they used. Higher power was only used in the first edition, first printing of the first edition, twice in the entire book, and it wasn't even capitalized. You know, now in contemporary Alcoholics Anonymous, a higher power seems to be the, you know, trendy phrase. Our steps don't mention higher power; they mention God, and this is where I move the newcomer to. You know, and I will oftentimes point out just a simple definition, again, to take away some resistance. Joseph Campbell, a great philosopher, said, God is merely a metaphor for all the for that which transcends all intellectual thought. It's that simple, nothing more. God is just a metaphor for that which transcends all intellectual thought. Is that enough to just for us to walk together and suspend your belief enough? I don't care about your old, you know, patterns of you know, your old faith, your history of your religious or, you know, or non-religious growing up. Right now, you're a hopeless chronic drunk. You can't stop drinking, and we have a power that can and will guide you. We happen to call it God. Are you willing to move forward and have your own experience with that by going through the rest of these steps? Yes or no? And if they say yes, good. Then we begin to say, okay, now whatever beliefs you have, let's look at them, examine them. Just the beliefs. I don't care about your faith, but your beliefs. Are they working for you or not? And if they're working for you, great, hold on to them. And if they're not, can you cast them aside? Can you come up with a new conception, as it tells me to do? Can I come up with my own conception, however inadequate? That one that I just offered up is simple. Of course it's inadequate. Any description that I can conceive of is going to be inadequate. So I'm not going to get hold on to it. I'm not going to get caught up in that. I'm not going to figure this out. There's been thousands of years of philosophers and theologians that have been trying to figure this out. I'm not going to do it. I don't need to do it. I just need to move forward with someone willing enough to say, I'm so screwed, I got to find this power. My own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient, again, contingent upon it being greater than ourselves. And how do I do this? Prayer. As I mentioned earlier, in my first experience, and I try to find in conversation with a newcomer, their first experience with prayer in terms of their powerlessness. When they hit that point of pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, and they were, you know, at their bitter end, and they cried out, I can't do this anymore, I need help. That's both my concession and my consideration that I need help. There's my second step consideration. At the same time, that's enough to move forward. That's just enough to move forward. I often, you know, will discuss with a newcomer reading from Scripture that I hold close to my heart, and because it's as simple as this, again, because I'm going to talk to him an awful lot over the next hour or so about prayer. And it says, if you search for me, you will find me. If you seek me, if you pray to me, I will hear you. If you search for me, you will find me. If you seek me with all of your heart. There's my instructions. I can't think my way into a belief in God. I have to search from my heart for that belief in God. This is, and again, this chapter is going to tell me ultimately where I need to look. Deep down inside, every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea, it tells me on page 55. This is where I need to do. I need to get quiet. I need to sit and just cry out, whether it's in anger or in piety, for the simple, show yourself. Reveal yourself. Damn it. Show up. I need you. Help me. I want to have an experience. Let's go through with this. There was an eternal yearning for God to heal me. That's been my experience. That's the experience that I need to be able to somehow offer and transfer and show to the newcomer. That there is a power that has a yearning to heal. If they're willing to open up to that. And if I can get them to do that, then alcohol has done its job. Because alcohol, as it says in this book, is my great persuader. It beat me into a state of reasonableness, where I was finally willing and able to open myself up to some new ideas, my new conceptions. You know? My experience is, unfortunately, if I postpone this, and I think that I have to think my way into belief, and then I confuse it with faith and all of that, most people never get beyond the belief in the belief in God. And it's an intellectual concept that I hold up here, and I somehow think that I can think my way into a belief in God, and that somehow this thinking, this mind is going to talk myself into faith. And it's not going to happen. These steps, the action steps for me translate very simply. Step 3 onward, you know, how do I pray? I pray from my heart and with my feet, with the actions that I take. That's what happens when I pray. I have to pray and then take the actions necessary. That's what's going to move me forward. Sitting around talking about it is not going to get me anywhere. So, what do I do? I skip an awful lot of we agnostics. Except, I do bring them to 52. As again, sort of another nail in the coffin of their hopeless state of mind and body. In the middle of the page, where we have our bedevilments. And I ask them this simple question of our bedevilments. I take the bedevilments and I phrase them into questions. And I ask them of myself. And again, I still use this on a daily basis, you know, as a general marker of my spiritual status at any given point. Am I having trouble with personal relationships? Check or not. Am I unable to control my emotional nature? Am I prey to misery and depression? Am I unable to make a living? Do I have a feeling of uselessness? Am I full of fear? Am I unhappy? Am I not able to be of real help to other people? Where am I at with this as a basic inventory? You know, my answers to this, you know? It's just a Franklin T bar. Am I full of fear or do I have courage? You know, am I useful or am I not? Am I living in a solution or am I, you know, moving back toward a problem? And again, based upon their reaction to that, what that's doing is moving me once again to a clear position of why they need to look at some self-examination, which we're going to, you know, jump them forward to very quickly. Because, you know, with that, I'm saying, man, it sounds like you're really not, you know, you're having a lot of trouble with getting along with people and the world of people. You know, it sounds like your life sucks. We've got a great way out. And all you got to do is write some, you know, a couple lists of some inventory about who you hate and you know, what you're afraid of and who you think you've harmed. It's fine, let's get going to it. And, you know, so again, I'm just selling them, you know, up toward the idea that I've got to take some action. And so it takes me, you know, and so here I am once again. If I can get them to a place where they're willing to believe just enough, to suspend just enough disbelief of their old history, their old agnosticism or their old atheism, and be willing to open themselves up to the possibility of a maybe, that if it has worked for others, if it works for me, then it might possibly work for you. Then let's give this thing a shot. What do you got to lose? We can, you know, there's nothing, there's plenty of pluses and no negatives. Let's get going. And so we open up page, you know, chapter 5, how it works. You know? And if they've had any experience with the fellowship and or have been around the fellowship for, you know, a couple of days or a couple of weeks or a couple of years, then I take them, you know, to the place where it says, do you want what we have? And are you willing to go to any lengths to get it? And if they say yes, I said, then you're ready. That's it. You're ready to take certain steps, like the rest of them. That's it. Again, simple stuff. This is very simple. I don't need, you know, this isn't... And then it tells me, as some of these we balked, I'm not going to find an easier, softer way. I beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. When I held on to my old ideas, nothing happened, you know, until I let go absolutely. But then it brings me to this great promise. But there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now, or as it said in the pre-production multilith, there is one who has all power, that one is God, you must find him now. I don't care which way you phrase it, but God's the solution, this is what I need to seek toward, and it tells me when I need to seek it. Now. Not next Tuesday, not at my next meeting, not when it's convenient, not when I do my nightly, you know, prayer. Now. Now, 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 now. I get to live in the moment freely, and I get to seek God now. And then half measures avail me nothing. I can do 50% of this, I get nothing. I do 90% of this, and I get nothing. If I balk at anything along the way, I get nothing except more misery. Half measures, partial measures avail me absolutely nothing. I have to ask God's care and protection with complete abandon. Am I at that point where I know that I am just so desperate and so screwed that I have no other option but to give up and say, okay, let's just do this? Our description of the alcoholic on page 60, which was given to us in those, you know, preceding chapters, the chapter to the agnostic and our personal adventures before and after made clear three pertinent ideas, our ABCs. That I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life. Step 1. That probably no human power can relieve my alcoholism. Step 2. That God could and would if he were sought. Also step 2. And again, it tells me how do I find God? I seek God. God is always present. God is there with the open yearning to heal, but I have to seek. I have to make the approach. I have to unblock that which has been keeping me blocked off from the power of God. And since we're going to keep it very simple here, the only place that I can be separated from God is in my mind. The only place that I can be separate from God is in my mind. The problem centers in my mind. This is a problem of my thinking. And it's my thinking that keeps me thinking that I'm the one who's in charge. I'm the one who thinks that I can run the show. I'm the one that thinks that I am God. That's where the problem centers. The only place that I'm separated from God is in my thinking mind. If I can begin to wrap my head around that, a little ironic there, but then I'm at a point where I can move forward. The only place I can be ever separated from God is in my mind. I find God in my heart, in spirit. And it's that, and when that heart is softened and can expand in loving kindness, there the power of spirit can arise and transform that sick thinking mind into a useful, helpful, and restored sane mind. But I'm at 1, 2, and 3. I've made my concession. I know that I have no power. I know I need power. And that the thing I need to do is seek. So I'm at a decision point. Am I in or am I out? Is God everything or is God nothing? What is my choice to be? There is no door number 3. Is God everything or is God nothing? And then again, more nails in the coffin of my alcoholism. The first requirement, not suggestion, but requirement is that I be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Is that my experience or not? Yes. Can I, is the newcomer experience that? If they're having trouble with it, I discuss it with them. Am I always in collision with somebody or something, even though my motives are good? Who's just because I think my motives are good doesn't make them good. But I don't see that because I live self-righteously. And then Bill gives us the example of the actor. And if you're familiar with that next page and a half or so, it's. Again, there is a spiritual measure that I can balance my spiritual condition with at any given point. Where am I the actor on any given day? Am I trying to run the show? Am I trying to arrange the lights, the set, and all the scenery in my life to get people to to do what I want them to do? And am I being mean and nasty about it and cranky and an old jerk about it, or am I I'm just being overly nice and kind and whatever I have to do to get my own way? Am I doing that? And then, if that's how I am living, what are the results? It usually shows up in the same way it does on 61. I don't get my own way. I have to be more demanding or more gracious. I have to do whatever I have to do. Are not my troubles really my own making? Am I not really a self-seeking one trying to be kind? Am I not a victim of the delusion I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of the world if only I manage it well? I hear oftentimes people talk about, my problem is I'm a people pleaser. I'm not a people pleaser. We're not people pleasers. I'm just here to do whatever I have to do to get my own way. If I have to be nice, fine. I'll be nice. But if I will do anything, So I'm not here to people pleasing. Nonsense. I'm manipulating. That's what I'm doing. And the better I'm at, is the more successful I think I am. If I can fool all of you, then I think I'm doing okay. But I'm miserable at the end of the night, because I got to do the whole damn thing over again tomorrow. It's weary. It's tiring. Talk about it easier swept away. I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do it anymore. And in particular, I can't do it if there's no booze in me. Oh my God. Then it's even worse. I'm self-centered, egocentric. And then 62, these lovely, lovely paragraphs where it tells me, it finally speaks to me of what I actually am, my truth. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that I now know is the root of my troubles. It's the very root from which this entire life grows, and which the fruit of, the bitter fruit, is what is harvested out of my life. of selfishness and self-centeredness, and it's driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. If I'm being driven, if I'm on a bus or on a train, I'm being driven. I'm not in control. I'm not in charge. I'm being driven by the conductor or the bus driver. These are what's driving my life. Fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, and 100 other forms of self. That's what's driving my life. I'm not in charge. I just think I'm in charge. I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt me seemingly without provocation. I'm such a nice guy. Why do you treat me like this? But invariably I find that at some point in the past, I made a decision based upon self that later put me in a position to be hurt. My troubles are always of my own making. I am an extreme example of self-will run riot, and I can't see it because I'm so busy trying to run the show. I don't want to look at myself. I'm too busy looking at you and why you're not doing what I want you to do. I must be rid of this selfishness. I must or it kills me. God makes that possible. I don't make that possible. I lack power. I have no power, and I have no power over my thinking mind, and I have no power over alcohol any more today than I did back then in the wet days. God has power. My responsibility is to seek the power and to act as God's servant and show up and be a part of this blessed universe. God makes that possible. There's my solution. And there's no way of getting rid of it entirely without God's aid. I have to have God's help. And finally, the simplest question of the all. This is the how and why of it. First of all, I had to quit playing God. Why? Simplest question. I have to quit playing God. Why? It didn't work. Bingo. Whoa! Revelation. Again, it's the blessing of alcoholism that shows me that simple answer. It didn't work. Makes sense when I read it on the paper, but it took me how many decades of banging my head against the bottle to finally understand that it was never going to work. It never did work. And I'm just a drunk. I have to quit playing God. So am I in or am I out? What's my decision? Am I going to go forward or am I going to go back to the darkness? It's as simple as that. And then we come up with the more metaphors. But, God's the director, and then therefore I take direction. God is the principal, then I act as the agent, and I act on behalf of the agent. God is the father, and I'm his children. I'm his child. Yeah, that was the whole thing. I could get being being God's child, but again, selfish and self-centered, I just wanted to be the only child. It's like, pick, or at least a favorite child, It's like, aren't I special enough? I can trip myself right through this. But, what does Bill say? Simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. It meant destruction of all things self-centered. This is where it begins. I have to look and realize that this is what I have to do. My selfishness and self-centeredness has to be leveled. Deflation of ego at depth is what the early members used to talk about. And they would do that pretty rudely and harshly from early descriptions in the hospital bed. And they'd walk out 3 days later, separated, having made their third step decision, and basically going around and making their amends, after that, and then turning around and showing back up at the hospital to help someone else to do exactly what they had just gone through themselves. But when I take this position that I'm in, that from here on out I have just enough belief and just enough willingness to suspend just enough thinking on my own part to say, okay, I'm going to give this a chance. I really believe this. Or, okay, prove it to me. I'll do it, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where my disbelief is, as long as there's enough willingness, for me to, oftentimes I hear people tell me about, I'm just a procrastinator, and I didn't want to do this right away. I postponed it or I put it off. I'm not a procrastinator. I'm an I don't want to do it guy. So that's the difference. I have to be forced into wanting to do it and having no other options. You know, it's like procrastination is just an excuse for what really is. I don't want to do this. But there's no reason not to. And that's, again, our responsibility to show up as a fellowship of you know, responsible, happy, contributing, working, you know, useful members of this fellowship and citizens of this, you know, of this planet, and be a living example of what it looks like to be a recovered happy member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I sincerely take this position, remarkable things happen. All I do is just make a decision, and I'm going to get some results. I have a new employer. Being all powerful, God provides what I need if I keep close to God and perform God's work well. Okay, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. If I have a new job, I don't walk in and tell the boss that, you know, well, I'm going to take, you know, my breaks at 9, 11, 15, and, you know, an hour and a half lunch. And I say, no, what do you want me to do, boss? Here I am. Established on such a footing, I become less interested in myself, my plans, my designs, less selfish and self-centered. More and more, I become interested in seeing what I can contribute to life as I feel new power flow in, just enough power. Maybe it's just enough curiosity to see if this thing will work, that I can begin to face some part of life successfully. I become perhaps conscious of God's presence. I began to lose my fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. I am reborn. Any action always helps in me losing some level of fear. And more often than not, that's usually where I or the newcomer is always trapped at this point. It's like, I don't know what's ahead of me. I'm afraid. Well, let's go find out. That's all it is. Let's go find out. Let's just try it. Then our third step prayer. I offer myself to God to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. I'm out of the judgment game. We're going to try to be. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I can finally show up for something other than just me. Take away my difficulties, not so that I can just be fat, dumb, and happy, but so that victory over them can bear witness, so that I can bear testimony to the power of God, God's love, God's power, God's knowledge, God's way of life. May I do thy will always. And I will fail at this, but it's a prayer that I invoke as one bookend of some actions I'm going to take in steps 4 through 7 and close the bookend with the 7-step prayer. God, in my understanding, in Bill's story, he talks about, I'll read it exactly. I humbly offered myself to God, 3 days separated from the substance. December 14th, 1934. He entered Towns Hospital on December 11th, 1934. Separated from the substance 3 days. Evie's there, and in Evie's presence, in the afternoon of the 14th, I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood Him. The "as we then understood him" did not come from Jim Burwell, our atheist friend, who, you know, oftentimes is credited with the need for that qualifier of "God as we understand him." That really came from the early prayers of in their association with the Oxford group in their morning meditations and quiet time and prayer time when Bill was still at Dr. Bob's house. Ann Smith would run the morning meditation and prayer time, and she would always conclude with an Oxford group prayer: "Dear God, as best as I understand you currently, please," something to this extent, "as best as I currently understand you, please manage my life as I am unable to manage my own life as I now understand it." So it's not just "God, as I understand him," something that I can wrap and pick and choose candy machine sort of God, but "as I then understood him, there's the implication that I will, as I grow closer to this power of God, develop a greater understanding of my relationship with this power. And so my understanding will change and morph as I move through this. God, I offer myself as I then understand. That's all I need to do. I start from where I stand. And if wherever I'm at, whether I have, you know, deep religious faith, great. If I'm timid about it, and I have just enough willingness to give this thing a shot, that's great too. It's sufficient. It's good enough. We thought well before taking a step, making sure we were ready, that I can at last abandon myself utterly, completely, without reservation. I needed to, you know, when I make my first step concession, I need to, you know, do it without reservation or any lurking notion. Now, the same thing. I have to abandon myself to this process without reservation or any lurking notion. Do we take it with a spiritual understanding person? Yes. And it gives us examples. Do it with your sponsor. And then what's it do? It tells me. Now it's time for action. Next, as in immediately, I launch out on a course of vigorous action. Vigorous. Not like, you know, tepid, but vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though my decision, step 3, was vital, necessary for life, and a crucial step, all the rest of the other steps are based upon me making this decision. And a decision without action is nothing but fantasy in my head. A decision without action is nothing but a hallucination. It means absolutely nothing. The only way I can affect a decision is to immediately take action. Though this decision was vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in myself which have been blocking me. My liquor is but a symptom. I need to get down to my causes and conditions. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles. That's the root of my troubles. And now I need to get down to the causes and conditions that are fertilizing those roots and you know, get down to the exact nature of my defective thinking that I'll be able to find out through the process of steps 4 and 5. And then begin to have God remove in the actions that I will take in steps 6 and 7. So I need to get down to my causes and conditions. And we're not talking about the booze anymore. What we're doing is talking about where the problem centers, where I'm separated from God, my sick thinking. It would have little permanent effect unless at once, again, a time parameter, at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of. And when I do make a strenuous effort to face and be rid of it, what happens? It will have a permanent effect. I will recover from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I will be set free and I will experience the 10-step results, the promises that, you know, where I will be in a position of safety and neutrality and on and on and on and on and on. And so therefore, I start on a personal inventory. How do I start on a personal inventory? Where do I start on a personal inventory? This is where I start. On a personal inventory. I hit my knees. I've already hit my knees when I say a third step prayer. And then I remain on my knees and I continue to pray. The easiest thing in this whole process is a fourth step inventory. You know, and there's 100 different variations and forms of the... I've got some if you want them. You know, on the four column list and all of that, I don't care. I oftentimes just do it with a pad of paper and a pen with the newcomer right then and there. I'll hold the pen and paper and I'll just start asking them. But before any of that, I talk to them about this as a whole process of prayer. And it begins on my knees. God, help me to see the truth about my resentments. Show me, God, where I'm fearful and where I'm blocked off from you. Dear God, help me to see how I have harmed people. And let me be complete in all of that knowledge so that they can truly see the truth about how I've wrecked people's lives. Help me to see that truth. And then I get up. And I pick up a pen and a paper and I write. And as I said, what I do is, you know, it's like, who are you annoyed at? Who do you resent? Who are you pissed off at? And it's the simplest thing in the world to do. And I say this time after time after time. I do not need to be in a 12-step fellowship at all to do a 4-step inventory. I do not need to be sober at all to do a 4-step inventory. It's at least the first half of it is really, really simple. I just have to be able to know who I hate, what I'm afraid of, and who I've harmed. I could be drunk as hell, and I know that because this is exactly what I talk about every night at the bar stool. I walked in, I sat at the bar stool, and if the poor bartender or someone was saying, unfortunately sitting next to me, you're not going to believe what the boss did to me today. I can't believe the girlfriend treats me like this. Do you know how that makes me feel? You know, and of course I didn't have a therapist to validate my feelings, so I had to say, get my feelings validated at the bar. Oh, do you have that for you? And so those first three columns are not new information. I'm drunk when I know all of this stuff. And I sit around and I moan and groan for years about that. Who do I hate? You know, what they did to me? You know, who am I mad at? You know, column one. What they did to me? Column two. The juicy stuff that I want to tell all the, my sad sack stories. And how it made poor little old me feel. Column three. Did it affect myself? My self-esteem, my emotional security, my personal, my finances, it's like, this is what I moaned and groaned about. It's not new information. I just got to go through it. Who am I resentful at? And then if they start telling me what they're annoyed at, I say, I don't care what they did to you. Who else do you resent? Who else do you resent? And when they run out of names, I said, okay. Okay, what did Colonel Mustard do to you? And then Mr. Green, and whatever it is, whatever the names are, because it doesn't matter, because most of this stuff is all going to be similar anyway. And so I get them going, and I make it possible to just move this through this thing rapidly and quickly. And how do I know that it doesn't take a long time to do an inventory? The gentleman that took me through this process, he knew that I had some familiarity with it, and so he didn't go into great detail. He just said, okay, on such and such a date, we're going to go and do inventory. And I think it was going to be on a Monday during the day. And he gave me about 2 weeks to do inventory. And you know when I started it? Sunday night. You got it. Right. Exactly. Sunday night, I did inventory. And I got it done for Monday morning. Was it good? Was it great? Was it sufficient? It worked. It doesn't take a long time to do it. I did it because I wasn't procrastinating. I just didn't want to do it. But then I had to do it, so I did it. And I got results. Doesn't matter. My motives don't matter. If I'm doing it, I'm going to get some sort of results. As long as I'm as honest as I possibly can be. And again, I don't necessarily recommend that. But most of us do some version of postponement and avoidance and all of that. But again, I want to make it as simple and non-threatening and as enjoyable. And I tell them, listen, there's some juicy stuff in there. Write it down if you want. I'm not going to listen to it, because it's all going to be some version of, we all did the same things. We all fell off the same bar stools and all of that stuff. So, we all hated people for the same, different, slightly different reasons. And because I wasn't getting my own way. And it's just variations on that. And so I got them going through that. But then what happens again? By the time we finish that the first column, the second column, and the third column, then I have a prayer list. And then I have to begin to pray for every single individual on that list. And there is where the transformative value of this inventory begins to become valuable in my life. First I pray as it tells me to do in here. I saw that resentments must be mastered, but how? I cannot wish them away anymore than alcohol. This was my course. Prayer. Can I begin to realize that people who wronged me were perhaps spiritually sick? Dear God, please help me look upon these individuals as perhaps broken, just like me. Perhaps in their own path and in their own way, a spiritually sick, another child of God. I don't have to like what they did to me or their symptoms or anything like that. But can I look upon them as another broken human being, perfectly imperfect, just like me? Dear God, help me show them the patience, tolerance, and pity that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And I need to pray for each of those individuals. I have to change my mind. Dear God, help me change my attitude toward them. Help me look upon them kindly and with tolerance and patience. And there were some individuals on that inventory who, when I began to pray for them, it was as simple as this. You know, it was like some of these resentments that I initially had were long and hardened and deeply rooted in a hardened heart. And that heart hadn't been softened by any sort of power of spirit yet. And so the best prayer I could come up with was, Dear God, I hope that SOB gets what he deserves. And I would pray that for a couple days. And then sooner or later that would soften a little bit. And I hope that guy, you know, gets what he deserves. And then I hope that, all right, you know, I'll try to think of him as a child of God. And little by little, I paid attention to trying to soften my heart toward him and to look upon him as broken in some way that I may or may not understand, may not care, didn't matter. But the importance was that I needed to change my attitude. And the only thing that could change my attitude toward that was not the thinking mind that was holding on to that attitude, but the heart that could soften it. And that's where the power of prayer began to come in. And then, if you're familiar with the story in the back on page, in Freedom from Bondage, and the explanation on page 551, where it talks about, again, another remedy for how to be free of a resentment. If you want to be free of resentment, pray for that individual, everything you want for yourself to be given to them. And pray for their health, their happiness, their well-being, everything that I want for myself, I ask for, you know, to be given to them. So I pray to change my attitude, and I pray for them. And there are still individuals who I pray for. Some who I still have issues with, you know, or may have, you know, an occasional issue with or difficulty with at this point, and or those that I just may know that are in trouble. And that prayer still remains the same. Dear God, please grant so-and-so good health and a long life. Grant them, please, great financial security, and may they know contentedness. May they live a life of loving kindness, and may kindness know them, and may they know kindness. May they find deep love and richness in their relationships. Dear God, may they lay their burdens down, and may they conquer their demons. And I go on with this. Everything that, and it's important that I verbalize that. I don't sit there silently and think of that. I actually pray it out loud. Oftentimes in the car, always in the morning, in the evening, but oftentimes at any time throughout the day, when a person's thought comes to mind, I pray something along those lines to them. Not in a hurried fashion, and so there's, I gotta get this done. It's just a loving kindness sort of meditation, and it's important that I express those words, those vibrations go out to the universe. Because that's, I have found to be the most effective value of prayer, is when I voice it. I don't know how it works, I just do it. I was told to do it, and the process has worked for me, and it continues to work for me. This book gives me really good detailed instructions on how to do an inventory. But this is the beginning part. And then what has happened, and I tell the newcomer, and I'll wrap this up quickly, but now I tell the newcomer how to, you know, to do those first three columns, and then to pray, and to pray, and to pray, and to pray for a week or two. And then, so they do get a little bit of a break looking and praying for those people. And then I also ask them to pray to see their part in it. So I don't have them write the fourth column in between, you know, just right at the moment. I want them to be softened in their heart, and their mind to be a little bit transformed, just enough so that they can begin to see what they were unable to see before. And oftentimes, if I've been walking through this fourth step with them, I'm praying for the ability to see their truth, so I can help them out as they walk through this beginning of a prayer life, an ongoing prayer life that'll carry them through, and carries me through every day that I'm on this earth. But there's the beginning of the transformative power of the fifth, of the fourth step, in combination with the fifth step. And it has nothing to do with the you know, and mind you, if there's any accountants out here, God bless you, it's a noble profession, and I need, you know, need you in my lives. But the writing out of the inventory is just a simple accounting. That's all it is. You know, the work happens in here and in the prayers that I begin and have to offer to these people. I need to ask God on my knees, help me change. Help me see the truth. Let me be complete about this. Reveal what I cannot see on my own unaided eyes. And if I have trouble seeing it, I'll talk to someone about it until I can begin to see the truth. Help me to see my part in this. All of these are prayers that move me through my resentments and the fears and the harms. And we'll finish up with those and move on to the action steps next week. And so we'll open this up to a discussion. Thank you.